Blog Talk Radio.
No big deal. Just spoke to Glenn Greenwald, the guy who broke the NSA story over the weekend. It's whatever, though. No big deal. that was a fun conversation. Didn't feel much like a weekend for me. I obviously had to work Saturday, and then Sunday I spoke to him. So, a little tired, a little wiped out. But it's all right, though, because I have a full show prepared for you today. And doing the show is like medicine. So no matter how tired I am, this is like I'm injecting, I don't know, some very powerful upper into my veins. I would say heroin, but that's not an upper. It's like I'm smoking crack cocaine as I'm doing the show. That might not sound good, but it's fun. Don't do crack. All right, I got a lot of great stuff to get to. Let me stop fucking around here. Reuters has a big announcement about the TPP, and it ain't good. Then we have a really, really, really disastrous situation unfolding in Afghanistan. We fucked up big time, and I fear it might even be worse than just a fuck-up, and I'll explain why. I also have John McCain is going to weigh in on that fucked-up situation in Afghanistan and shove his foot in his mouth. Chris Christie talks about Syria and what policy we should do moving forward, and he proves that he doesn't know dick about Syria. Chris Christie's knowledge of a proper diet is more vast than his knowledge of Syria. Was that fucked up? Should I not have done that? And then Bill Maher and Richard Dawkins spoke about the regressive left, as it's being referred to now. Not my favorite term, but I have what I think is a nuanced breakdown of their back and forth there. And then later on in the show, Pat Robertson, John Hagee. John Hagee predicted the end of the world, and he was wrong. So we'll mock him over that and much more. So sit back, relax, let's get started here. And we'll kick it off with that no good news about the TPP. I always feel weird saying TPP. It almost sounds like I'm saying TP, and then just adding another P, which is exactly what I'm doing. Reuters has a huge announcement today on the issue of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They say, quote, "The United States and 11 other Pacific Rim countries have reached a deal on the most sweeping trade liberalization pact in a generation, but the accord on Monday faced initial skepticism in the U.S. Congress. In a deal that could reshape industries and influence everything from the price of cheese to the cost of cancer treatments, the 12 countries will cut trade barriers and set common standards. Details of the pact were emerging in statements by officials after days of marathon negotiations in Atlanta. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would affect 40% of the world economy and stand as a legacy-defining achievement for U.S. President Barack Obama if it is ratified by Congress. Lawmakers in other TPP countries must also approve of the deal." All right, so this is terrible news. It's not only terrible news because the TPP is a bad policy, but it's also terrible news because of how the media is reporting on it. Now, I just went through this for you here. Again, this is from Reuters, a pretty well-respected organization, and I use Reuters all the time. But the way they frame this is just flat-out wrong. They said, hey, this is going to be a legacy-defining achievement, quote, "a legacy-defining achievement for President Barack Obama." Yeah, but if it's an achievement, that would mean it's already a foregone conclusion that it's a positive thing. Now, not only, again, do we know from WikiLeaks that this isn't really a positive thing for the American people, but when you look at the polling data, the overwhelming majority of the American people, Democrats, independents, and Republicans, were all against further so-called free trade deals. Because in reality, what are they? They are outsourcing deals. So they continue here and explain what the holdup was based on. They've been negotiating for a long time now, and they were stuck on a few different parts. The most important one was, quote, negotiating teams had been deadlocked over the question of the minimum period of protection to the rights for data used to make biologic drugs made by pharmaceutical companies. So this is one of a few different areas where they weren't sure, hey, how do we work this out? This place wants to be stricter on this. This place wants to be looser on this. Apparently, they were able to iron out all the details and come to some kind of an agreement. And now you and I have to hope that it just doesn't get through Congress here and that other legislatures elsewhere will block it as well. So this is, as I've said before, one of the best examples of how we know our government is bought and paid for by powerful interests. It's bought and paid for by multinational corporations and billionaires and just businessmen, well-off businessmen. And we know that because when you look at the provisions that have leaked, it's just a giant fuck you to the middle class in America, and of course a giant fuck you to people in developing nations as well. So just to give you a few examples here of provisions in the bill or in the deal, companies would be allowed to sue for loss of expected future profits under this deal. So that means you don't have to actually make the profit. You can just say, I think we're supposed to make X, Y, and Z, and if we don't, well, then the taxpayers have to subsidize me because that's part of the deal. So this deal really sets up a system of out-and-out socialism for the corporations. If we haven't already been at that point for a long time now with corporate welfare and things like that and bailouts when the going gets tough for the well-connected, well, now we're really at that point. They're just putting it in a deal that, hey, if we don't make money, you have to pay us either way. Does it work like that with small businesses? Stop and think about that. If your local, you know, dry cleaning spot or local deli goes under, does the government come in and say, here, let me give you a bailout? Or are the owners of the business allowed to go to the government and say, I know I didn't make money for the past 3 years, but I think I was supposed to make money, so now I'm going to sue you for the loss of the profits I expected. Unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. Another provision is international tribunals that are set up to settle disputes between companies and governments. So the way this would work is, let's say there's some third world government that has some new environmental laws or anti-pollution laws that they put in place, and a U.S. company, a multinational corporation, doesn't want to abide by that. It used to be that the way that the system would work under any government is, well, the government passed a law. It doesn't matter if a corporation disagrees. So what? You can't just disagree with the law any more than somebody could say, yeah, I murdered this guy, but so what? I'm not abiding by, the law of murder. Well, this makes it so that now it's a 50-50 thing. Now the company can say, well, I disagree with the government when the government tells me I can't dump my toxic chemicals into this river. And then where do they go to solve it? They go to an international tribunal. Now here's the even more fucked up part. Who's going to pick the people that are going to be on the international tribunal? The corporations. So a corporation gets to do whatever it wants in a developing nation. When they're called out for it, they go to an international tribunal full of corporate-friendly people who say, I side with the corporation. They get to do whatever they want. So this is basically corporate fascism everywhere. They could do whatever, and they don't have to worry about any other considerations like the people of a given nation saying, we disagree with you and we want to stop it. This is unbelievable, and the fact that a supposedly liberal Democratic president is in favor of this is obscene. All right, and then also we know that under the deal, we let in Malaysia. Now, Malaysia has had a problem with tolerating slave labor. So what did we do when – or what did the Obama administration do when – different media outlets called them out for that, and they said, hey, why are you letting in a place that tolerates slave labor? They changed the categorization of Malaysia. So whatever department it is that says, hey, you get a bad grade for tolerating slave labor, surprise, surprise, the next time that report was released, all of a sudden they no longer tolerated slave labor. Now, did they actually do anything? No. Did they change anything? Any practices there? No. But you just change it in the report, and then you get to turn around to everybody and go, no, we're not allowing in a slave-tolerating country. They stopped doing that, even though they didn't stop doing that. We have it on a sheet of paper, so shut up. Again, supposedly liberal Democratic president is like, slavery? Well, if it's elsewhere, fuck it, who cares? Maybe we'll get some cheap sweaters out of it that we can sell at Walmart. Let's go for it. And then also, not that you need any more reasons to oppose this, but we also allowed Brunei into this deal. Brunei implemented Sharia law in 2014. They didn't have it up until that point, and then one day, okay, let's do Sharia law. After they did that, very soon after they did that, the U.S. went to them, and they were like, great, you want to get in on this trade deal we got going on here? Wait, I thought you guys opposed Sharia law with every fiber of your being. You told me that the reason why you're fighting not only Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but why you stayed to fight the Taliban is that even though the Taliban were not a direct threat to the U.S. and they weren't trying to take us down, well, they were trying to implement Sharia law, and we can't have that because we believe in freedom and democracy, except for when we don't, and we allow Brunei in after they implement Sharia law. It's just a fucking pathetic state of affairs, and we know that hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs are going to be shipped overseas now or just shipped elsewhere as a result of this. Everybody should oppose this, and I'll stand and fight with you regardless of where you are on the political spectrum as long as you oppose this. So I know it's a weird thing, but Alex Jones is with us on this. Great, Alex, let's fight for this together. There are plenty of people who are just flat out in the anti-Obama no matter what crowd, in the Tea Party crowd, that are with us on this. Perhaps for the wrong reasons they're with us, but they're right that they're with us. So let's fight with them. The sad thing is, because of how establishment our main parties have become now, we might need to rely on the craziest members of Congress to block this. Isn't that a stunning and weird change up here? We might actually be cheering for people like Louis Gohmert on this one. Again, he might be against it for the wrong fucking reasons. He's right to be against it. So forgive me if for the next month or so I'm sitting here cheering on a bunch of idiots. As the old saying goes, a broken clock is right twice a day. But even having said that, I do think there will be some strong progressives against this as well. People like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Alan Grayson, probably Keith Ellison, and a lot of the Progressive Caucus. So we need to stand with the Progressive Caucus and the Tea Party members who are going to fight this because they're right and the establishment is 100% wrong. All right, we're going to go to the even bigger news now. Breaks my heart to report this next one. Okay. We had a horrible situation unfolding over the weekend in Afghanistan. Think Progress reports, quote, an Afghan clinic run by humanitarian aid group Doctors Without Borders was bombed in a U.S. airstrike on Saturday. 23 staffers and patients were killed and 37 were injured after the bombardment. For a long time, that number was 12 people killed, and then it ticked up to 19 people killed. And now today, some articles are reporting 23 people killed. Now, I should be clear that there still is some dispute because some articles are still saying 19, but others have come out that say 23. So Think Progress is reporting 23 staffers and patients in total were killed, 37 were injured. Quote, American military forces in Afghanistan admitted they were conducting an airstrike at 2:15 a.m. in Kunduz that may have resulted in collateral damage to a nearby medical facility. Afghan officials, meanwhile, claim there were 10 to 15 terrorists hiding in the hospital. 12 staffers and 3 child patients were among those killed. I should be clear here and mention that Doctors Without Borders said, absolutely not, there were not 10 to 15 terrorists in the hospital. Quote, according to Doctors Without Borders, U.S. forces continued bombing for 30 minutes after receiving phone calls telling them the hospital was being bombed. one of the nurses who survived said the following: "There are no words for how terrible it was. In the intensive care unit, six patients were burning in their beds. We saw our colleagues dying. Our pharmacist, I was just talking to him last night and planning the stocks, and then he died there in our office." Now, of course, the U.S. is claiming that this is an accident, and perhaps it is, but here's the upsetting part of the conversation, or further upsetting part of the conversation, that very few people want to talk about. It's not like the U.S. wasn't aware that this was a hospital. Of course they were aware that this was a hospital. In fact, U.S. commanders are now saying that Afghan forces asked them for the bombing because they said Taliban operatives were hiding in the hospital. And on top of that, this hospital in the past has been called, quote, controversial. Now, why do they call it controversial? Because this hospital dares to help anybody, no questions asked. So in the past, have they possibly helped Taliban operatives? Yes. Did the Taliban operatives, when they went there, did they have guns and were they ready? Oh, I'm going to kill you if you don't help me. No. They help anybody that comes to them. According to the U.S. and the West, they go, no, that's controversial. We can't allow that. So is it a hospital or is it a terrorist safe haven? I don't know. We're just asking questions here. Oh, did we bomb you? Oh, it was an accident. But the Afghan forces did tell us that they wanted us to bomb there, and we did it, even though we knew it was a hospital. But it was collateral damage, so don't read any further into this. So overall, my takeaway from this is exactly like the stories that we've gotten elsewhere, whether in Pakistan or Yemen or others in Afghanistan or some in Iraq as well, where we learned that the U.S. bombed the funerals of different Taliban operatives. Now, when they did that, they knew, hey, if we get one or two more Taliban guys, we're also going to get some women and children, because it's a fucking funeral we're talking about here. And what happened? They decided to bomb either way. So I file this in the same category as that. And this is also like signature strikes. Now, personality strikes are the kind of drone strikes where the government says, we know exactly who we're going at after, and we have good intelligence that indicates where they are right now. That's what a personality strike is. A signature strike is, you fit the profile, and we have enough information to maybe say that you're guilty. So, in other words, it might be a cell phone that's allegedly connected to somebody who we think might be a terrorist, and then you go bomb there. So you don't know. But it's enough. It's the same kind of gray area that we're talking about with the bombing of the Taliban funerals, and it's the same kind of gray area that we're talking about with this hospital. But here's the dirty secret. The gray area is not a fucking gray area, any more than it's a gray area when, as we learned from Chris Kyle of all people, the real objective is to target basically any military-aged male in the region. So if you happen to be, you know, military age and male, regardless of what you're doing, it's guilty until proven innocent, which is flipping the burden of proof, which, by the way, is literal. You might think, oh, he's extrapolating here, he's doing a thought experiment. No! They've said that, they've framed it like that before. The U.S. government says, okay, well, if we kill you with a drone and you're a military-aged male, we're going to assume you're an enemy combatant or an insurgent until proven otherwise. And then, by the way, what's their burden of proof for proving otherwise? Who knows? That's why they always say, oh, yes, no, our rate of getting the right people is really high. And then, meanwhile, you have investigative journalist organizations come out and they go, well, that's not true at all. You know, we saw what was happening on the ground, and here's a list of thousands of civilians that you killed. There was one report that said that over 95% of the people killed in drone strikes are not top al-Qaeda operatives. So this is lunacy that we're talking about here. And it gets to a very fundamental and very basic question. Why do they hate us? Now, I'm not in the crowd that says none of it has to do with religion, none of it has to do with ideology. Of course, there's a significant amount of hatred against the U.S. and others, pure religious fundamentalism and based on ideological reasons. But also, a lot of the hatred comes from shit like this. When you do stuff like this, you push people into the arms of the fundamentalists. You make it so that people who otherwise were more moderate or they had no horse in the race, now they go, give me an AK-47. I'm going to go kill the goddamn infidel American sons of bitches. They're the great Satan for what they did here to the hospital. You think you didn't create at least 1,000 more jihadists from what you're doing here? And by the way, are we allowed to call this terrorism? Or will the government designate me a terrorist for saying that this is terrorism? Because the intentions argument here, it no longer applies. It's no longer just, hey, we meant well, but whoopsie, look what we did. No, I just described to you, I just explained to you the way that it works, how we targeted the funeral of Taliban operatives where we maybe would get one or two more Taliban guys, but we knew we would get women and children. Same thing here, they knew this was a fucking hospital. But they said, well, there might have been 10 to 15 Taliban guys there. We don't know for sure, but we're told that that might be the case, so we're going to bomb anyway, knowing that there are staffers there and knowing that there are civilians there. This isn't a gray area, guys. This is state terrorism. Now, are there cases where indeed it is just a pure accident and, hey, we got civilians when we were trying to get people who we know are terrorists? I'm sure that's the case, and those are ethically and morally slightly different than what we're talking about here. But here, the gray area is not a fucking gray area. Here, if there was any other regime, any other government around the world that did this, we wouldn't be attempting to rationalize it. We wouldn't be trying to justify it. We would just say, fucking terrorists. It goes back to the idea of human shields, which comes up a lot nowadays, and that's something that some people in the government have used in responding to this. And the argument goes, well, I mean, can you really blame us? You should really blame, if there were Taliban guys there and they were among civilians, blame them because they're using human shields. But I pose the question to you, if they're setting a trap by using human shields, why the fuck would you walk into the trap and become the bad guy? I don't know about you guys, but it's not a fucking moral conundrum for me, human shields. If somebody's robbing a bank and they have somebody in front of them that they're using as a literal human shield, and they're walking out of the bank, and the cops are there, have the cops ever said, shoot through the civilian? What are you waiting for? Kill the civilian and the person behind. The guy's using a human shield, so obviously you kill them all. No, that's not a moral conundrum. That's not a thing. That's not a position that's respectable. This isn't a thing that's debatable. If you're going to kill the civilian, end of conversation, don't fucking do it. And if you do it, don't you dare say that your critics are the ones that are morally misguided. You're the one that's fucking morally misguided. Imagine that's your mother who's the civilian and the robbers behind them walking out. You have to figure out a different way to approach this. And by the way, why the fuck are we still in Afghanistan, man? So we pulled out of certain regions, and then the Taliban came and took it over. So everybody in the U.S. said, okay, in the government, I should say, said, okay, we got to go back in and take the area back. Here's my response. Why? Let's say we stay there for another 10 fucking years. What, you think that when we leave after 10 years that the Taliban isn't yet again going to come and take over more territory? They are. You're just delaying the inevitable. I don't like the fucking Taliban. I also don't like the regime that's in control in South Sudan. I also don't like the regime that's in control in the Congo. I also don't like the North fucking Koreans. But am I going to spend our blood and treasure and have us be responsible for killing civilians as a result of this? Fuck no, I'm not. So I need you to stop. My tax dollars. I'm an American citizen. My tax dollars are funding this. I don't want fucking blood on my hands. I don't want my money going towards this shit. I don't care how moral you think you're being. I don't think it's moral. I disagree. Take my money, put it towards healthcare, put it towards education, put it towards turning the fucking water on in Detroit, which apparently you don't have enough money to do, but you could bomb civilians all day long. Use it for almost anything other than this. This is ridiculous. This needs to stop. And yes, this is state terrorism. I didn't expect to go on that long for that. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we got John McCain is going to weigh in on this bombing. And he's going to say the stupid shit you expect him to say. Chris Christie is going to talk about Syria and get pretty much everything dead wrong. And then are we going to lighten it up at any point? Excuse me, at any point here? I'm looking for something that'll you'll lighten up over. perhaps the story about the goofballs in Tennessee who are incredibly religious and are trying to pass laws that are involve like God condemning people and shit. But that's not even all that light, to be honest. Who knows? Okay. No, there is probably the very last story we'll do will be a break from the heavy stuff. And that last story involves a man who's fired for farting. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
I'm about to get a cab and masturbate. Then I see a hot girl in the back of Dave. Let me get your cat girl, no has to wait. That's what I thought, not what I said to her. Said I walk up to her like I know you heard of the kid. You heard what I did, you heard of my shit, you murderous bitch. She's like, nah, you're being weird, what are you talking about? I'm like, pulling on my phone like a boss. YouTube about to get off. But that's the type to why I'll use some porno pop up. I'm like, hold up, how, that's not even me. Like, I don't jerk off mobily. Then her friends coming up and wanting to know if everything is okay. I'm like, nah, it's a rape, you can't help. Give me a break, please, get the heck away. I turned to her, let me buy you a drink, she likes lime. Told a man to patron, she like lime. Then he tried twice, the car got declined. I'm like, is this gonna be a machine issue? He was like, no. I was like, obviously there's something wrong. I got dough, like I'm not broke. I got donuts with the same car, like about an hour ago. He like, dude, I don't know. Now I'm looking at the girl, she just wanna go. And I ain't talking about with me, bro, I mean alone. I got one more chance to prove myself, so I'm like, I'm athletic, girl, I've got several racks, league MVPs. At my crib, I got some pizza, plus a little bit of weed. In my room, I got a TV, plus I recently did cheat. Girl, I even have a fridge that has the water on the door, like with the crush ice. You know, I don't give a damn what you plan right now. This is me coming at you as a man right now. Let me free. Let me free, God damn it, let me free. Just let me free, please God, just let me free. The girl from the first verse, somehow let me fuck. Fast forward, 7 months, be in love. Some real serious relationship type shit. Despite this, I ain't fucked for days. Tried last night, but was pushed away. But I've been acting well behaved today. I smell okay, and Del Pandora's playing. Now she laying on the floor, and I'm praying this bitch is horny. I go and give her a smooch. She's kissing Nikki back, so I pull her the boobs. Bad move, she don't like that. Bad move, her boss being mean to her via email, she wanna write back. I'm like, right now? She like, yeah. What do I say? Can you just help me? Oh, okay. What's the context? And she like, well, he talked to Jane before coming to me. Who's Jane again? I said. She like, wow, you should know that. Okay, I guess I forgot. She like, dude, that's my other boss. Okay, true, so shouldn't your first boss go to the other boss before you, right? But Jane is a hands-on, she yelled, okay, well, I just don't understand the dynamic then. I don't work with these people, she started crying. Wait, stop, what the fuck is this? Nah, you don't ever take my side. About an hour later, till I'm on her good side. We in bed, hands on her good thighs. I try to kiss, she like, good night, but I'm like,
I just turned off The Departed for a movie about a beat. I've been cutting back on farting, tweeting, arguing, and weed. Yesterday I wore a cardigan at dinner with your sweet and supportive aunt during the fourth quarter of the Eagles. Now rewarded.
You know I don't give a damn what you plan right now. This is me coming at you as a man right now. Let me free. Let me free, God damn it, let me free.
Bitch. All right, we're back, guys. For the 800th time, too. Don't text me talking about the songs. I didn't fucking pick them. I always get that now. But I was digging that song. It was a little weird, but I liked it. All right. John McCain. Here we go. John McCain is going to win on the U.S. bombing a hospital in Afghanistan. And his conclusion is unbelievable.
Senator John McCain. Senator, thanks for joining us. I want to get to Syria in just a moment, but I do want to start with Afghanistan. We learned yesterday that it seems as though a United States airstrike badly damaged a hospital run by Doctors Without Borders in the Afghan city of Kunduz, killing 19 members of the staff and patients and injuring 37. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says it may be criminal. I know we're still waiting for all the details to come in on this, but you're a former Navy pilot, so you have some insight into this that many of us don't. How can something like this happen?
Well, we call it fog of war, unfortunately, and it's a tragedy, and our thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's a wonderful organization, as you know, the Doctors Without Borders. If we had had an air controller, it very most likely would not have happened. And this is also a result of our withdrawal. And by the way, it was surprising, this Taliban attack in Kunduz, because it's in the northern part of the country where the Taliban have never been as strong as they have in other parts of the country. So it was an element of surprise, failure to have forward air controllers there, and fog of war. And it's one of the reasons why we hate wars.
I don't know if you caught it there, but he said in the middle, this is part and parcel of what happens with our withdrawal. So by getting out of Afghanistan, we managed to bomb a hospital and kill 23 people. I don't know how that makes any sense to you, John, logically. Because we got out, we bombed and killed 23 people at a hospital. No, see, to do the bombing, you would have to, by definition, be there to do the bombing. You know what it would have looked like if we really got out? We would have been out. Full stop. End of conversation. And then we would not have bombed the hospital. Now, you can make an argument of, well, maybe the Afghan forces would have done something fucked up to the hospital. Maybe that's true. But when we do it, the blood is on our hands. And U.S. taxpayers are responsible for our government and their actions. And you just created at least 1,000 more jihadists as a result of this. People who may have been on the fences, people who didn't think twice. Now they might go, fuck, you killed 3 children, by the way. 23 people total, over 10 staffers. You just made, what are the families of those people going to think now? What are they going to do? There were stories in there about how people were scrambling to get to the phone to try to call whoever, the UN or Doctors Without Borders, and let them know, like, no, tell them to stop bombing us. It's a hospital. What are you doing? But his answer is always more war. It doesn't matter what the question is. The answer is more war. How would that have stopped this, John? No, you know what would happen if we're there for more war? More stuff like this is going to happen. Even if you say, hey, we 100% mean well. Our intent is totally pure. Well, accidents still happen even when your intent is 100% pure. So there would be more of this happening. Now, again, some people say, well, the Taliban came into the area, so, you know, blame them for coming into the area, and you could blame that on the U.S. withdrawal. But wait a second. As I said before, it doesn't matter when we leave. At some point when we leave, the Taliban is going to start taking over more territory. So what do you want to do, stay there forever to just prevent the Taliban from doing what they do? Some people answer yes to that. I'm not an imperialist, and I don't believe in occupation, so I don't want to do that. And you could say, hey, that's cold to the people in Afghanistan who aren't members of the Taliban. If they really want them out, motherfucker, kick them out. Use all the other side as weapons. Well, the Afghan forces have weapons now. We created a military there, too, as well as in Iraq. You want them out, get them the fuck out. Do it on your own. I got no interest in this, man. I'm tired of policing the world. I'm tired of being an imperialist power. And then always what ends up happening is shit like this happens and we breed more hatred against us. So we have to spend taxpayer money here, and our own soldiers die oftentimes, and then at the end of it all, people still hate us, and at the end of it all, you get the same result anyway, because whenever we pull out, you'll still have the Taliban take over in the area. It's a lose-lose-lose the more we do intervention, but John McCain's answer is more intervention. He blamed us bombing a hospital on us withdrawing. No, if we withdrew, we wouldn't have fucking bombed a hospital. 2 + 2 = 4. All right. Fuck him. That pissed me off. Now we go to Chris Christie, and he's going to talk about Syria, and he clearly doesn't know anything. Chris Christie discussed his strategy for dealing with Syria if he becomes president, and he proved here that he doesn't know dick.
Going in aggressively this week, 2 or 3 days of airstrikes. You heard Donald Trump right there. He sort of says maybe it's okay. Maybe have Putin go in and do that fight. You heard President Obama also this week. He believes that Putin's making a mistake and could fall into a quagmire. Are they right about that? If you were president, what would you do?
Well, Donald should be concerned that he's agreeing with Barack Obama, because just when you think it can't get worse, it does. And just when you think that's foreign policy can't cost more to the American people, it does. We don't need to be friends with Vladimir Putin, and we don't need to be worried about whether he's in a quagmire. After 40 years, we allowed Russia back into the Middle East. And now who are they partnered with? Iran.
So how do you push him out?
Well, listen, you should be established. First of all, he should never be there. But now that he's there, America's got to reestablish its presence in that area. We should be the ones leading the fight on ISIS. And by the way, we know Putin's not fighting ISIS. Putin's there to prop up Assad.
After he's already no-fly zone?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this. There's now 300,000 nearly dead in Syria because of Assad. And now Putin is going in and teaming with the Iranians to prop up Assad. Only Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton could mess up this foreign policy that badly. And anybody who agrees with allowing the Russians into the Middle East is just painfully naive.
No, actually, it's the exact opposite. You're the one that's painfully naive. So let me get this straight. Vladimir Putin says we are going to go in, admittedly, to help their ally, Syria, fight ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, and all the jihadist rebels who are fighting the government. And his response is, Russia. Yeah, but what does that mean, Chris? You're not saying anything of substance. He said, quote, we don't need to be friends with Vladimir Putin. Who said anything about being friends with Vladimir Putin? You know who's actually right about this? For the wrong reasons, admittedly, but Donald Trump. He's like, I don't give a shit. If Vladimir Putin wants to go bomb ISIS and other jihadists, by all means, go ahead and do it. I'm not going to do shit about it. Go ahead, let him go in there and do our dirty work for us. Why would you be against this? And then Christie frames it as if it's a negative thing, like, Putin is there to just prop up Assad. Okay, slapstick, but as I just laid out for you before, so you don't like the Assad regime, but you also don't like ISIS, so what do you want to do? Do you want to go in there and fight both sides? You want to topple Assad and beat the rebels? And who do you want to lead the country? You tell me. Mickey Mouse? You want to rename the region Narnia? You want to create a third group there, a mythical moderate force, which the U.S. has been trying to do? You want to continue this ridiculous strategy? Obama kind of agrees with you, by the way. And what happened recently? The people who we trained to go in there to be the moderate rebels, they went into Syria and immediately handed all their weapons over to al-Nusra, who is the al-Qaeda affiliate in the region. So there's your strategy, smart guy. Let's go in there, let's find a moderate rebel force, and they'll go in there and they'll topple Assad and beat ISIS. Except that won't happen. What they do is they go in and they align themselves with al-Nusra, they align themselves with ISIS, because they're also against the Assad regime, and their main enemy is the Assad regime, so they want to topple them by any means necessary, including fighting alongside ISIS fighters. And then also this fucking ridiculous meme that's been going around now, this idea that somehow Assad's regime is responsible for every single death that's happened in the region. That is categorically not true. In fact, Wikipedia, of all places, has a really long page on this, detailing all of the casualties in the Syrian civil war. And the casualties are almost exactly 50-50. So you have people dying on both sides of this civil war, civilians dying on both sides of this civil war, and there is no, narrative wherein Assad is 100% wrong and the rebels are 100% right. That's simply not true, Chris, and that makes you look like an idiot. It's so funny. He's saying other people are naive. He's lecturing other people about geopolitics, and he's got nothing of substance to add to the conversation. He's like, Vladimir Putin bombing people. Fucking Vladimir Putin. Yeah, and he's bombing jihadists. Now, some people have been tweeting me, he killed this one civilian, see? That's fucked up. And they're acting like I'm for it. Of course I'm not fucking for anybody bombing civilians, anybody getting the wrong people. But all the propaganda coming out of the U.S. media today is exactly that. fucking propaganda. All the headlines that say, Russia's bombing non-ISIS rebels. They don't go on to tell you that those non-ISIS rebels are also jihadists. They don't go on to tell you that it's al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and other people who are radical rebels, who are fundamentalists. So, bottom line, don't buy into the bullshit. Don't buy into the propaganda. It's a civil war going on there right now. And everybody under the Bush administration said, why the fuck are we in the middle of a civil war? But today, when that was happening in Iraq, but today in Syria, everybody's like, let's get more involved in the middle of a civil war. How about fuck no? How about that? And how about if Vladimir Putin wants to go in there and fight the bigger evil, which is ISIS and other jihadists who are in the rebel group? By all means, Vladdy, I'll give you a pat on the back as you do it. All right, next. I always get a fucking tweet barrage when I talk about this, too. People who think they know shit about Syria and the Middle East, but they don't, getting angry at me because of the way I cover Syria. Look, if you're not going to do your homework, then shut the fuck up, all right? Because people come after me like, yeah, I can't believe, what are you outwardly supporting Assad, bro? Is that what you're doing? No, I'm acknowledging facts on the ground, and I'm acknowledging that the rebel situation is so bad that General Petraeus floated the idea of arming al-Qaeda because al-Qaeda were the, quote, moderates in the region. I'm acknowledging that reality. I'm acknowledging that for well over a year now, there's been no moderate Syrian opposition. Now, you could fucking shove your head in the sand and deny that, but that just means you're simply ignorant on the facts of reality. How many articles did I have to cover about that for people to understand that? I mean, there was an article in the International Business Times, there was an article in the Daily Beast over a year ago. Where is this moderate opposition that Washington is talking about? It doesn't exist. They're trying to create it out of thin air. And why are they doing that? Because of imperial ambitions. Like everything else, it fucking boils down to that. They think we can micromanage, and who cares if we fund jihadists to overthrow the Syrian government, because maybe we can set up a loyal Salafist government in Syria. That's the way that they're thinking. They would rather have Assad gone simply for the fact that if Assad is gone, whatever government would replace it has a better chance of being loyal to the United States. Because right now, Assad is aligned with Russia, Assad is aligned with Iran, and we don't like that for geopolitical reasons and for imperialistic reasons. But it's not for practical reasons, and it's certainly not for human rights reasons. Because remember, like I just told you, the rebel situation is so bad, people in Washington were literally debating, should we arm al-Qaeda to try to topple Assad, and in their mind, to try to fight ISIS. Ridiculous. All right. I think you know where I stand on that. I got angry there, man. I got pretty fucking angry there. Don't make the same mistake in Iraq. That's the bottom line. All right, the DEA. Let's go to these fucking brazen asshole hypocrites. The Huffington Post is reporting on a story about the DEA that deserves some kind of an award for hypocrisy. So they say the following, quote, a number of federal employees with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration have failed drug tests over the past 5 years only to receive short suspensions or other minor reprimands, according to a review of internal DEA discipline logs first uncovered by USA Today. There have been at least 16 reported instances of employees failing random drug tests since 2010. While a number of these incidents were handled administratively, with a few people choosing to resign or retire amid the proceedings, none of the cases ended in an employee's outright firing. The agency punished most employees with short suspensions, sometimes as little as 1 or 2 days. The DEA's drug policy states that applicants who experimented with or use narcotics or dangerous drugs, except those medically prescribed for you, will not be considered for employment, though it makes exceptions for limited youthful experiments with marijuana. Okay. This is unfucking believable, man. And this is how you know that the drug war at this point is just fucking kabuki theater. Let me ask you a question. If you heard this same story, but you take out drug crimes and you put in murder, let's say mass murder, the reaction would not be the same, right? So if you learn somebody who's in charge of law enforcement in the U.S. who has put thousands of murderers in jail with their work, turns out on the weekend he likes to murder. The response to that is, oh my God, we're all incredibly outraged over this. This in no way, shape, or form is excusable. Lock that motherfucker up and throw away the key. You want to know why we say that? Because that's a real crime. Murder is a real crime. When I read that, okay, these guys did drugs and they got away with it, I'm pissed off at the hypocrisy. But I'm not, I don't want to put these guys in jail. I want to take all the other people who are in jail for doing drugs out of jail. So this is all fucking, it's a dog and pony show, man. Okay, so the people who are cracking down on drug crimes are doing drugs. My response to that is, great, treat everybody else the way you're treating your own. If you get caught doing drugs, at worst it's a couple days suspension, then you come right back and everybody acts like you're a normal person because you're a fucking normal person. But why the fuck would you treat anybody else differently? Why would you put other people in jail for that? The laws are beyond ridiculous. I mean, it's hilarious that we have the nerve to call ourselves believers in democracy and freedom when we act like this. The word freedom has to mean something. For you to change your own consciousness, you know, whether you're making yourself more excited and you're doing an upper drug or you're relaxed more and you take some kind of a downer or you hallucinate or whatever, for you to control your own consciousness, that is part and parcel of freedom. You're going to have the government legislate your mood, how you feel, based on what you took and what you put in your body. That's ridiculous, and they know it's ridiculous because there are, some substances are allowed, even though some substances are worse than the illegal substances. I mean, hello, alcohol, for example. Did you know the withdrawal symptoms from legal anti-anxiety pills like Xanax, Klonopin, you name it, the withdrawal from that is way worse, and the withdrawal from alcohol is way worse than whatever withdrawal effects you feel from cocaine, for example, or the withdrawal effects that you feel, if you feel any of them at all, from marijuana. So it's not based on objectivity. It's not based on science, and a lot of people probably wrongly believe that it is. Like, you had a panel full of expert scientists who sat down and said, that drug should be illegal, it's too dangerous, that drug should be legal. That's not how these laws came about. In fact, the first laws that made drugs illegal were in the early 1900s. Before then, it was a fucking free-for-all. You can go get some cocaine at the store. You can go get some heroin. I told the story how back in the day, for little kids, they used to give little kids a spoonful of opium before they went to sleep, so they just get knocked right out. I mean, a lot of these laws are clearly, if you know the history, based on racism, through and through. They banned opium dens before they actually banned opium, because the opium dens, who usually frequented those? Asian immigrants who were building the railroads. And the white people at the time were afraid that if their white daughters were hanging out in the opium dens with the Asian guys, that they would get them high and then they'd do you know what with them. So you've got to ban these dens for public safety. Please, it was out and out racism. Same thing if you look at marijuana, if you look at cocaine, you look at how those laws came about. That wasn't for science or rational reasons. Why is it the case? It just so happens that the drugs that were ingested by the rich people never were banned. Isn't that weird? Nobody ever said, actually, there was prohibition briefly, but that went away very quickly. But for the longest time, it was, and by the way, the KKK pushed for prohibition, and there were a lot of people who obviously were against it, who were upper class and who were in the North. But the KKK pushed for it. They ended up getting it eventually, but obviously it was pulled back. And that leads into the next part of the argument here, which is, the exact same thing that happened under prohibition is happening right now with drugs being illegal. You've created a black market that is surging. You've created mega drug cartels in Mexico, which now fucking behead people and fight the Mexican army. So you've created this monster just like you created the mafia when you did prohibition. To keep the laws the way they are is madness. And we're even at the point where people in the DEA get caught doing drugs and everybody laughs. Oh, whatever, bro. So you smoke some weed. Who cares? Now lock up that guy for smoking weed. Okay, now. Let me do one more, and then we'll take a break. Let's get into some crazy, crazy Tennesseans. A Tennessee County Board of Commissioners is considering a resolution asking God to save them from his coming punishment over gay marriage. Royal Story reports, quote, the proposal has been put forth by Commissioner Karen Miller and is listed on the docket as a resolution condemning judicial tyranny and petitioning God's mercy. The resolution begins like this, quote, whereas the governor, attorney general, and all we Blount County legislators have sworn an oath consistent with the moral law of God. And then it goes on, federal judges have once again usurped powers not delegated to them and have violated reason, irony, the rule of law and natural law by purporting to strike down state laws and acts of the people, recognizing and protecting natural marriage. We adopt this resolution before God that he pass us by in his coming wrath and not destroy our county as he did Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighboring cities. Okay, this is fucking Looney Tunes, dude. You have a Tennessee county that's openly discussing this resolution. They're all sitting around there, and they're like, you know, we should let God know that we're not with this immorality of the heathens and what our nation is becoming. We don't want to be punished like Sodom and Gomorrah. God forbid that there's some other biblical punishments we get. Imagine if there are locusts that come get us here in Blount County, Tennessee. Are you guys really this stupid? You do know that the Bible is a collection of myths and fairy tales. You do know that it's not scientifically proven and verifiable. You do know that you believing the Bible is no different than somebody during the Roman days believing in the Roman gods and them being literally true, right? Than any of that. They really believe it, and they're like, we need to let God know we're not with gay marriage. God, we are against gay marriage. Please do not smite us. How mighty you are, God. But here's the thing that drives me up a fucking wall. So clearly these guys really believe it, or else they wouldn't be doing this. Well, wait. Have you guys in this county banned fish markets? Are there any fish markets there in your county? Because, you know, that's an abomination in the eyes of God, too. Have you eaten shrimp, crab, lobster, any kind of shellfish? An abomination in the eyes of God. You guys did do this big campaign where you banned razors, right? And you got rid of Gillette. You got rid of Mach. You got rid of all of them. Because it's an abomination to shave your face. It's an abomination in the eyes of God to shave your face. So I assume that everybody, all the guys sitting there around this table debating this, God will attack us over this gay marriage ruling. I'm sure that all of them had full fucking beards. And they're like, well, this is godly as well, so I must do this. And remember, guys, you say I'm cherry-picking. Wait. The stuff about being anti-gay, that's in Leviticus. The stuff about not shaving, that's in Leviticus. We're talking about the same part of the Bible, but they focus on one part, they ignore the other parts. And we just said that this was put forth by Commissioner Karen Miller. Wait, you do know that in the Bible it says women can't lead men ever for anything. So there can be no women teachers, for example. There also can't be women proposing resolutions and being commissioners. That is unbiblical. Just the fact that you propose this would invite the wrath of God that you say you're only going to get because of gay marriage. No, you guys are the ones that do the incredible cherry-picking and mental gymnastics, because with these guys it really comes down more to how their culture has developed. See, they're used to growing up in a culture that hated gay people, so they think, my mommy and daddy liked it, were against gay, so they must have been right. But that's no different than people 30 years before that say, my mommy and daddy hated the blacks and thought they should be separate, so they're right. No, they're not right. Do you just accept everything that any authority figure told you when you were a dumbass little kid and now you've grown into a dumbass adult? It's so sad. You're such out-and-out authoritarians. Do you realize you are the American Taliban? You are the Christian Taliban. You're doing resolutions at a state government talking about how God is going to come after you because the country's allowing gay marriage now. You do realize that that's just factually not true, right? And then when God doesn't come after you for gay marriage, are you going to come out and say, oops, our bad, I guess my God was the wrong God? No, you'd never do that. Because all you do is look for shit that backs up your own ideology and your own religion. So it's non-falsifiable in your own mind. It's your religion is true to you by definition in your own mind. If that's not anti-intellectual, then anti-intellectualism doesn't exist. And of course it does exist, and you guys are all anti-intellectual. And if you're going to make resolutions talking about God's morality, get the fuck out of here and go to Saudi Arabia. You'll fit in better over there. All right, let's take a break, and then when we come back, Bill Maher and Richard Dawkins talk about the regressive left. John Hagee did a wrong end times prediction, and we got much more. Stay right there, guys. Guys, we are back. Shut her up, bro. All right. Let's get to Bill Maher and Richard Dawkins here. Do my best to do a nuanced segment here, because there's a lot of important parts that they're right about, a lot of parts where they're wrong. So let's break this down. Bill Maher and Richard Dawkins spoke about this new term that some people have been using called the regressive left. So let's listen to how they lay it out here, what their points are. And then when we come back, we'll discuss who they're really referring to and whether or not it's an appropriate label, and we'll break down whether or not they're right or wrong.
Our friend Sam Harris coined an interesting word this week, a phrase, regressive leftists. You know, the people who don't quite get it about being liberals in the world. I know you were championing somebody named Maryam Nemazi.
Yeah.
And you and our great friend, Salman Rushdie, got her reinstated. She was going to speak, as so many people have at universities, and then they get disinvited because she's an ex-Muslim and was just speaking her mind, but apparently that's hate speech in this world. So what did you and Salman
Rushdie... I am shocked about the way on university campuses, the principle of free speech, when I think that the only university I went to, the University of California at Berkeley, the free speech movement in the 1960s, what a betrayal we're seeing now.
Right.
With campuses all over the Western world, over America and Britain, are denying people the right to come and speak at campuses. If you can't speak your mind on a university campus, where can you? I mean, that's what universities are about. It's about free speech. It's about being brought to... It's about being exposed to ideas that you haven't met before, perhaps you're hostile to. If you only ever get exposed to ideas that you agree with, what kind of a university would that be?
But also this notion that somehow Islam and Muslims are this protected species, that if we talk about them at all or criticize at all, it's somehow hurting or humiliating Muslims.
Yes.
And it's a ridiculous
idea. And it's confused with racism as well.
Right.
And so they think that if you criticize Islam, you're being racist.
Right, or
and you're absolutely right that the regressive Muslims give a free pass to Islam. Though they kind of write about everything else. I mean, they write about misogyny and all the other good things, bad things in that case.
You're talking about repressive leftists, liberals, yeah.
Yes. But in the case of Islam, it just gets a free pass.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the terror of being thought racist.
Right. Or at worst, an Islamophobe.
Islamophobe,
yes. A silly word that means nothing.
Yes.
I mean, it's so dumb because, you know, all the people who are accused of being Islamophobes, like you and me and Sam and Ian, we're liberals. We're liberals about everything. And they applaud that. And if you say something about a woman who's forced to wear a beekeeper suit in the hot sun all day...
Oh, that's their culture. You have to respect it.
That's right.
Yes.
That's what they say. It's just insane.
Yes. It's just the one exception. Liberal about everything else, but then with this one exception, it's their culture. Well, hell with their culture.
There you go, Dr. Richard Dawkins.
So there are multiple parts there where I think they're pretty much spot on and they're 100% right. And then at times I think they veer off a little bit. So let me break this down here. So if you're against free speech, that is regressive, and I have no problem calling you a regressive leftist, if you will, if you buckle on the issue of free speech when it comes to certain groups of people that you're in favor of protecting. You can protect certain groups of people without saying, I'm going to censor opposing opinions. So, yes, I have no problem with calling people regressive if they come out against free speech. And they gave a good example of that there with this Maryam Nemazi thing. Now, recently, the university she was going to speak at, Warwick, or the student union, I should say, they're now allowing her to speak, but there was a brief period there where they basically said, well, you're inflammatory, so we don't want you to speak here. Well, then, yeah, I would say the student union was absolutely being regressive. You should be so in favor of free speech that even when it's people you hate, you should be in favor of them talking. Now, with somebody like Maryam Nemazi, you shouldn't even hate him. You shouldn't even hate her, and she should be allowed to speak. But even if it's somebody like Ken Ham, who's a creationist, of course you let him speak, and then you fucking crush him by continuing to use free speech. The answer to bad speech is not censoring speech. The answer to bad speech is more speech, because let the shitty arguments be made, and then you crush the shitty arguments, to the point where I defended Pam Geller, for example, who's an insane right-wing prick, I don't like her. I don't like anything about her. Her policies are ridiculous. But when her Draw Muhammad contest was shot up by a terrorist, well, then, yeah, now you're going to make me defend her because she might be a bad person, but all she's doing is using free speech. And you don't get to shoot her because you don't like her speech. That makes you a worse person. So they're right. I would say regressive if people are not defending free speech, and that's fine. No issues there. Where they lose me a little is where I just think they're wrong in their explanation of things. So when Marr says, well, you know, to some people on the left, well, Islam and Muslims are protected and can't be criticized at all. He said all, at all. Well, Bill, I mean, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. Maybe there's 1%, 0.01% of liberals who might be in that camp. But by and large, and here's the problem, a lot of people who I think Marr and Dawkins and Harris and others, and even Majid Nawaz, who's a liberal secular Muslim, a lot of the people that they would lump into the bin of regressive leftists, I just don't think they're regressive. And I know a lot of my audience might disagree with me on this, but I'm part of the TYT network. Cenk, for example, people throw that label around at him a lot. If you go through the TYT YouTube archive, he's only done 8,716 stories on, yes, fundamentalist Muslims, and how much he disagrees with them, and how much he hates every aspect of that ideology. He's for women's rights, he's for gay rights, he's for free speech. You go down the fucking list to the point where they showed the Muhammad cartoons. They were like, of course we're on the side of free speech. So if you want to use the term regressive leftist, that's fine. But don't just use that as a catch-all phrase for everybody you fucking disagree with on minor things. Take Glenn Greenwald, who I had a conversation with yesterday. It's up on the YouTube channel. Everybody can check it out. He freely admits that there's plenty of terrorism done in the name of Islam, where Islam is the majority, if not the only factor. When the Taliban guy shot Malala Yousafzai in the head, he said, yeah, you can blame the religion for that. You can't say, well, they shot Malala because of U.S. foreign policy, because that's not true. They didn't do that. And Glenn admits that. So when you say Glenn Greenwald is a regressive leftist, when he's consistently stood up against terrorism wherever it may come from, including from the Muslim world, that's just not true. That's just not correct. So I don't think Glenn Greenwald fits the label. I don't think Cenk Uygur fits the label. I think there are some liberals who you can say they're part of this group that says in every circumstance, no Islamic terrorism ever has anything to do with Islam. Yeah, those people I'm fine with you calling regressive leftists. Even, to be honest on this one, even President Obama to a certain extent. Because every time there's a Muslim terrorist attack where they tell you, I'm doing this in the name of Islam, President Obama gives a speech and he says, these guys aren't Muslim. This has nothing to do with Islam. Well, wait a second. You can't just say, I'm only taking the good Muslims and that defines Islam, any more than other people say, I'm only taking the bad Muslims and that defines Islam. All of them count. All of them count, and when they're all saying I do it in the name of my ideology, credit them for that. So, for example, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Christian. He says I'm doing a lot of the good I do in the name of my Christianity. I'm an atheist. I don't get to say, no, that's not because you're Christian. No, he's telling me it is. So he gets credit for that, and I can't slam him because of his religion, because that would be silly. By the same token, some people in the KKK point to doctrine, and they say, well, I'm doing this in the name of my religious doctrine. I can't say that person's not Christian either. Anybody who says they're Christian is a Christian. Same with Islam. If Malala Yousafzai says, I'm a Muslim and I'm doing this in the name of my religion, I can't tell her no. By the same token, when Al-Qaeda says, well, we're doing X, Y, and Z in the name of our religion, I also can't tell them no. And then when they go on, another area where I think they're wrong is when Marr says, Islamophobia means nothing. No, Bill, so if you say people are wrong to call me an Islamophobe, I agree 100%. I don't think you're an Islamophobe. When you say people are wrong to call Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris Islamophobes, I agree. I don't think you guys are Islamophobes. Clearly, at all, really. So if people are attacking you with that, you're 100% right to disagree with them. But to say, therefore, Islamophobia is not real, well, that's when people start to roll their eyes. Now, I disagree with the term Islamophobe because it's saying you fear an ideology. Well, there's nothing wrong with fearing an ideology. I fear Christianity. I fear fascism. I do fear Islam because I fear all religious ideologies. So I agree that the terminology is clunky, and I would change the terminology. But I fear that what Marr is saying there is he says Islamophobia means nothing. So that sounds to me like, you know, bigotry against Muslims isn't really a problem. Well, that is, no, that's a big problem. Now, again, I don't think you or Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris fits into that category. But, for example, we cover the story about how about 70% of Iowa Republicans want to ban Islam. Well, that's clear Islamophobia. Now, I agree we should change that term to Muslim phobia or whatever, but that's clear anti-Muslim bigotry there. The guy who stood up at the Trump rally, "We got a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. When do we get rid of them?" he said. Okay, well, that's clear anti-Muslim bigotry. And I think a lot of people get mad at Marr because, you know, he'll talk about the downsides of Islamic ideology, and I think he's 100% right when he does that. But he never really balances that out by also getting into detail about all of the real anti-Muslim bigotry coming from the right. And I think perhaps if he did that more, he might get some people off of his back. I don't think he'll ever get everybody off his back. I don't think Sam Harris will ever get everybody off his back either. But I think that if you spend more time focusing on that, then people will say, okay, I think his criticism of the doctrine of Islam is coming from a better place, so I'll lay off of him a little more. And then finally, point of, like, cultural relativism and, fuck their culture. I agree 100% that cultural relativism is not true. Not all cultures are equal, any more than the culture in Mississippi with the Republican Party there is equal to the culture in California with the Democratic Party there. No, I think all of us would agree the California Democratic culture is better than the Mississippi Republican culture. So it's not controversial to say cultures aren't equal, or it shouldn't be controversial to say cultures aren't equal. But I think the main debate that's going on here is just primary focus between the two camps in this debate. So while a guy like Marr and perhaps Sam Harris and others might say, well, we should focus heavily on Islamic doctrine and how that's a problem and put most of our focus there, a guy like Greenwald would say, as he did yesterday to me, well, no, the only reason why I'm focusing on our crimes is because we're responsible for it. So I would much rather spend the bulk of my time criticizing us because we're responsible for what we do in foreign policy and in other ways. And, you know, we can criticize other cultures as well, but it has to come after you criticize your own country first because you're responsible for your country, and then you could get to them. If you do it the other way around, then people – it just comes across as condescending. It comes across as patronizing. It comes across as, you know, you're looking down on them and you're implying that, well, we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. So it smells of bigotry. Again, I totally disagree that it is bigotry. I think with Marr and Harris and Dawkins, it's not at all bigotry. But I see how people can think that it is because they think since you're an American or you're a Westerner, you should spend most of your time criticizing the crimes of your own government and criticizing your own culture, because it's not like you don't have problems. And even if the problems in other cultures are worse, well, you still are primarily responsible for your side or your people. So police that, and then maybe once you get to them, then we won't criticize because we know it's coming from a good place. I know this is a long, drawn-out conversation, and it gets super complicated, and there's all these different nooks and crannies of the conversation to get into. I know I didn't cover everything I want to cover about this already, but that's my breakdown. I think they're largely right. The sentiment of what they're saying is right. Like, hey, don't fucking come after us, man. We're the good guys. I think that's true. But I think that in defense of themselves, they go a little bit too far, and they overreach with their claims. When Marr says, you know, Islamophobia means nothing. That's not true. I don't like the term, but the sentiment is real. And, you know, some liberals think Islam and Muslims are protected and can't be criticized at all. No, I think they criticize them, but they do it in a different way than you do. So instead of saying, I'm going to attribute this to Islam or Islamism, they just focus on the individual things that need fixing. Hey, I'm for women's rights. Wink, wink, they're not, so let's just fight for women's rights. Don't label it, but just say, let's fight for women's rights. Hey, I'm for gay rights. They're not, wink, wink, but let's fight for that, let's fight for that, let's fight for that. And that's to avoid the claims of, you know, of bigotry and singling out and stuff. And you might not agree with it, but I just think it's a different tactic and a different way of attacking the same problem. Okay, that was a really, really long segment, and I have no time left. All right, let's go to Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson is going to lecture liberals here about how it's really gay people persecuting and oppressing everybody else.
It was the gays said, look, we want rights. We want to be recognized. We want to be allowed to have unions, and now we want to be allowed to have marriage. And the Supreme Court said, okay, you can have marriage. All right, cool. They don't want to
that
stop there. What they want to do is persecute anybody who disagrees with them. They want those people bankrupted. They want those people put in jail. Is that what the left wants? The answer is absolutely. It is vindictive now. We're not talking about having rights from the poor, oppressed gays. We're talking about taking away the freedoms of everybody who disagrees with them. Now, do we want that in America? And don't you think it's time people stand up and say, listen, we've got to make a stand for these people, and yet they're not. They're being pilloried in the press. They're being laughed at in the press because the press is in league with the gay rights people, and they somehow think this is a civil rights issue. They better be careful what they're doing because they're taking away the rights of everybody.
Complete and utter nonsense. So he says, gays want people that disagree with them in jail. No, Pat. Who's the only person that spent any time in jail? Kim Davis. Why is Kim Davis in jail? Not because she disagrees with gay rights. Because she literally refused to give gay marriage licenses to people who have a right to get married. So understand, you could be a fucking anti-gay bigot all day long. All day long. Nobody's coming to force you to change your mind. Nobody's coming to drag you away in handcuffs. Nobody's coming to take away your constitutional rights. Not at all. It only becomes a really big problem when you are responsible for giving out marriage licenses and you say, I'm not going to give them to the gays because I don't like the gays. See, it's the Christian victim complex here from Pat Robertson. So he's, we're under attack, we're under attack, we're under attack. And why does he think he's under attack? We're under attack because we no longer have the right to take away other people's rights. No, well, then you're not under attack. Take out the word gay here, put in the word black, and then you'll see how ridiculous this is. You know, he's like, oh, the blacks don't just want equality. They want to put anybody in jail who disagrees with them. No. The only people that would ever spend time in jail is if, you know, they say, we're not going to give you a marriage license because you're an interracial couple. Well, then that person should go to jail. But if you just disagree with interracial marriage, well, okay, you're a bigot and I don't like you, but we're not going to put you in jail. You know, or you're a white store owner and you refuse service to somebody simply because they're black. Well, yeah, then you'll go to jail because you're taking away that person's rights. But, you don't have to like black people. Again, I think you're a bigot and a bad person and a racist, but I'm not going to put you in jail over that. It's only when you literally physically take away the rights of others. And we've gotten to the point now where it's no longer socially acceptable for Pat Robertson to make this argument on race, so he doesn't anymore. But with gays, it's still fresh that they just got the right to marry. So he's still like, why can't you let us hold on to this remnant of bigotry? I mean, we lost persecuting the blacks. Can't we still persecute the gays? If you don't let me persecute the gays anymore, then you're persecuting me. You have to be tolerant of my intolerance. No, I don't, Pat. All right, John Hagee. Oh, God, I've been waiting for this segment for a while, man. John Hagee is a charismatic evangelical preacher, and he has a huge following. And a few years ago, he decided to get even sillier than usual, and he started warning about end times. So last year, we covered a story on this. I want to take a look at the little end times infomercial that he did back then.
The Bible speaks of signs in the heaven, What does it mean? What is the prophetic significance? Is this the end of the age? And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. I believe that the heavens are God's billboard, that he has been sending signals to planet Earth, and we just haven't been picking them up. I'm going to walk you through 500 years and show you how God is literally screaming at the world, "I'm coming soon." The coming four blood moons points to a world-shaking event that will happen between April 2014 and October 2015. Jesus said in Mark 13, 24, 26, "But in those days the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give its light. Then they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." That verse describes a time in the future when the sun and the moon will eclipse at the same time. And God sends planet Earth a signal that something big is about to happen. He's controlling the sun and the moon right now to send our generation a signal. But the question is, are we getting it?
That blood moon was last week. Oh, that's so embarrassing. He gave you the specific dates there. He said, "This is going to happen between this time," whenever he said, "in 2014, and October of 2015. The blood moon was last week. We passed your window. Has God come back? Did I miss it? I see that the hockey season started in the NBA, but God didn't come back, unless I missed it. Was it on like a Wednesday? Was I busy at the time? Oh my God, this is so sad. But now here's the thing. All right, we have absolute proof that you were wrong, John Hagee. Simply wrong. He had books about this. He had like a DVD and shit. He would talk about it nonstop. So now, are all the followers of John Hagee going to say, "Well, I guess we picked the wrong leader. This guy's not right. I mean, he said it was going to happen. It didn't happen. I mean, your spidey senses are off, bro. I got to go to a different pastor. You're fucking up here." That's what's going to happen, right? Of course that didn't happen. Of course his people didn't leave his congregation, because it's not about making sense. It's not about rationality. It's not about facts. It's not about science. It's not about what can be proven or disproven. They're all emotional little children, which is why I find it hilarious when John Hagee, as he does all the time, weighs in on political debates and like has a condescending tone, like he's lecturing everybody and he knows what's right. No, you quite literally do not know what's right. You said the end of the world was happening. You said God was coming back last week, or in a window that ended last week. And now what do you have to say? And I'm sure you'll find some way to backpedal or ignore it or just move forward. And all your followers won't leave you, because, again, they don't care about facts either. But the bottom line is, man, you're an embarrassing, pathetic loser and a joke. You're not a serious person. Like, you wake up in the morning, you put on your tie and your suit, and, "Yeah, I'm going to preach the word of God, I'm a serious person." No, all you are is fodder for comedy for liberals and atheists. That's all you are. I literally laugh. I've seen pictures of you before, and I can't help but go, "That fucking jackass." That's what you are. That's the legacy you're leaving behind. The guy that got the date wrong on the end of the world is like all the other false prophets. And what does the Bible say about those false prophets again? I don't remember. Somebody tell me. Okay. Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee has done an amazing flip-flop on the issue of boycotts. Right Wing Watch reports, quote, "Back in 2012, Mike Huckabee came to Chick-fil-A's defense after the restaurant chain faced criticism for its founder's anti-gay statements and for donations the company's foundation had made to anti-gay groups. Huckabee organized a Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day in an attempt to block what he describes as economic terrorism targeting the company. On his Fox News show, he said he would never call for a boycott of Starbucks, Apple, or Amazon, even though he disagrees with their leaders' politics. All right, so you see what he did there? He said, ah, the left, they're so fucking childish. They're going to do an economic boycott of Chick-fil-A because they disagree with the politics of the owner. This is ridiculous. I would never do that to them because it's so childish to do boycotts like that. You see where this is going? Quote, Huckabee, however, seems to have changed his tune on culture war boycotts. Time reports that Huckabee has called on Christians to boycott all snacks made by Frito-Lay after it released limited edition Rainbow Doritos to benefit anti-bullying It Gets Better project. Huckabee had demanded that the group apologize and cut its ties with Dan Savage, who founded the anti-bullying group. The GOP presidential candidate's anti-Frito-Lay campaign reportedly came at the behest of David Lane, a Republican organizer who has linked gays to everything from car bombs to America's looming destruction, and who bizarrely suggests that the creation of Rainbow Doritos could destroy America and curtail religious freedom. So I like how he flip-flopped, obviously, but he's a sellout to his donors, even in a case like this. Some rich anti-gay asshole's like, I'll pay you to be against this. He's like, oh, right on, man. No, what a child he is. You know why I love this story? It shows you there's no principle at work here. This guy, Mike Huckabee, has no principles. Before, he was like, I'm just anti-boycott. Doesn't matter if it's left-wing or right-wing. I just don't like boycotts. It's economic terrorism. But then, not too long after, when it's an issue that he's on board with, he's like, let's fucking boycott. I can't believe this, man. But see, again, that just shows you have no principles, Mike Huckabee. You flip-flop whenever it's convenient to you. Now, compare that to somebody like me. I don't want to toot my own horn here. Other people are obviously in the same boat. But when it comes to free speech, for example, I'll defend it when a liberal says something that's, you know, considered too far. But you go back and you check the segments. I also defended people who I fucking hate with a burning passion, like Pam Geller, who is wrong on everything politically, who is an anti-Muslim bigot, but who did a contest to draw Muhammad and stuff like that, and then it was attacked. I defended her. I said, I don't like her, but it's irrelevant. She has the freedom of speech to do this and not get fucking shot. See, that's called consistency, Mike. That's called having principles. I defended the principle of free speech regardless of who it was. So as I've said before, the KKK or neo-Nazis have a right to do peaceful protests. They have a right. I don't like them. I think they're bad groups. I disagree with them on virtually everything. But I'm not going to not allow them to do a march or do a protest as long as it's peaceful. That's called being principled, Mike. Whereas you don't have it. I'm against boycotts except when I'm for them. All right. Finally, I got 90 seconds left. I'm going to squeeze in one more. You guys can catch this one on YouTube later. So there's a hilarious yet very interesting story in Huffington Post Weird News today. There's a 70-year-old guy named Richard Clem who worked at a pork company in New Jersey, but he was fired in 2014 because he farted too much. So today he and his wife, who also works for the company or worked for the company, are suing under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Quote, Richard Clem started working at Case Pork Roll in 2004 as a comptroller, and he believes he did a good job. At the time of his hire, Clem weighed about 420 pounds, but underwent gastric bypass surgery in October 2010. Clem lost about 120 pounds, but he suffered some embarrassing side effects, including, and I quote, extreme gas and uncontrollable diarrhea. In 2013, Clem's symptoms worsened, which caused significant disruption in the workplace. So they let him go, and they said, yeah, no, it was for that. And now his wife is saying, okay, well, we're going to sue the company because this is discrimination against obese people. So when I read the article, I got to admit, I didn't know how the fuck to respond. I didn't know what my take on it was. On the one hand, it's like, okay, it's a biological function. The guy can't fucking help himself. You can't fire him for that. He quite literally can't control it. But on the other hand, would I work next to somebody who's basically shitting their pants all day? And do I want to go about my business while I'm literally smelling the inside of your ass all day long? No. And that's something that can be a genuine distraction to the point where you might think, okay, we got to let this guy go. So I thought about it, which is a funny thing to think about, for a while, and I came to the conclusion, no, I wouldn't pay him damages and go that route. But what I would do is I'd offer him his job back, or this is what I think the court should do, and I don't even know if they have the ability to do this, but I would offer the job back so long as he takes the product that we discussed on the show maybe a year ago, which came out, that where a guy figured out how to – there's a pill that makes your gas smell fine. I don't remember what – did they say it was roses or did they say it was like chocolate cake or some shit? I don't know. I think he has a couple different options. But that's I would try to do that and say, okay, look, they have a right to fire you, right? The law allows them to fire you for virtually any reason. So if you're stinking up the fucking place, they could fire you. They might be being dicks, but they could fire you. I don't think they have a convincing case under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So try to let them back and say, you just got to take the pill, man. It's medicine. You know, it's court-ordered medicine that you have to take, just like the court could order somebody who's crazy to take antipsychotic drugs, for example. Yeah, I'd do that and then see if that works out. And if it doesn't work out, then I'm out of solutions and I'm assed out, pun intended. All right, guys. Love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.